proposed a definition of building, any structure, vehicle, place, not occupied by persons, lodging or carrying on business there, and whether or not a person is actually present. Mr. Spalding urged that the proposed statute be written so everyone could understand it, and when the statute said a building was a vehicle, it made no sense. He suggested that the committee employ the phrase protected property instead of using building, completely out of context with what the word meant. And then he suggested protected property means any structure, place, or thing customarily occupied by people or adapted for the carrying on of business therein. Justice Sloan asked why it was necessary to limit the definition to the carrying on of business. Mr. Spalding acknowledged that the suggested definition would suffice if a period were placed after people. Mr. Chandler proposed to go a step further and encompass the definition of forest land and public buildings. The definition would then read, protected property means any structure, place, or thing customarily occupied by people or used by people, including forest land. Anyway, that definition is essentially what we have in our draft before you today. Well, I think that's everything in there that has any bearing on that definition.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I must say that I read the minutes of the subcommittee, and when they passed out, and I was impressed with how much time Subcommittee 1 was, what hard work they were putting in on. I don't mean to downgrade that at all, but the way I read this, a car, a phone booth, a lemonade stand, or a fruit stand, would all be first degree arson.
Automatic laundry.
Automatic laundry, and so on. As I'm not at all sure that as a matter of policy, I would agree with that. I hate to say this because I have the feeling I've already said the main thing to slow the commission down today already. But I don't think if a guy burns up a phone booth, then it's the same sort of a caper as burning up my house. And I'm not at all sure that I want to treat the guy that was mad at the phone company, for example, as a first-degree arsonist, as a matter of policy.
Well, but somewhere along the line there, it comes to the sentencing more people. So what the sentence is.
You know what you know is common,
Well, we had the same argument before with respect to this several times. In fact, this was before the full commission on one occasion, wasn't it?
No.
It wasn't?
You were trusted.
Oh, that was it.
Well, I certainly hate to sound critical of the subcommittee because they worked so hard on it. But I must say that as I read it, a fruit stand, let's say, or a lemonade stand, or a laundromat, or a phone booth, or whatever, don't get into the car, is a structure customarily occupied by people.
But it's something that the arsonist can readily see that there's no people in there. Of course, I guess if he sets a time bomb in a phone booth, he'll go off the first hand, he doesn't know whether somebody's going to be in there or not. But like we had the Lippman coal store in Birmingham in Corvallis several years ago, and of course it wasn't arson, just an accidental fire, but there were four or five in the middle of the night, but there were janitorial people there, and one of them was killed. So there is danger to people whenever you got a structure where people could well be, even though it's in the middle of the night.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't disagree with Judge Burns at all, and I think he puts his finger right on the problem. But assuming that we change this to any structure, place, or thing adapted for overnight accommodation of people, Then, question arises, Bob Chandler's airplane that he sleeps in at night sometimes falls within that definition. Does your car fall within that definition? We split so many hairs on this that, again, I hope that this is something that we can wrestle with and work out among ourselves collectively here and not send it back to the subcommittee. I thought of myself, and you saw there in the minutes subsequent to the adoption of that definition, and I had some very great questions about it.
I just wonder if there is some concept short of the one here that would be reasonably workable and reasonably intended to achieve the ultimate aim, which is to safety of the human being. Life and injury of human beings is what you're really aiming for. Secondarily, you want to deter those who would burn up valuable property, which wouldn't involve any unreasonable risk to human life.
Well, do you agree that the protected property aspect is all right, and the public building deal is all right, it's first degree, and your comments are directed primarily to the other types of structures, which are customarily occupied?
Yes.
So we're directing this inquiry toward the third category, not protected property and not public buildings, but the others. Jake, what do you think?
I applaud getting away from the dwelling house sort of distinction. Thinking in an urban society, that doesn't make any sense anymore. And I also agree that the occupied phrase is overly broad. And Judge Burns, I'm just trying to think of some distinction in my mind. Some of the concepts that are passing through are one, a listing maybe of commercial property or whatever, stores, that kind of thing. But I don't like lists like that because they usually exclude people. And I was thinking of a dwelling house or accommodation plus a building in which a person is.
Jake, would you settle for the New York version?
I don't remember anymore.
Well, the subcommittee showed cause why the New York version did not a better job.
To what degree are you referring to?
I don't like the language of the subcommittee's thing. I just to mean the definitions now we're talking about. I don't like your language. I just concur in Judge Burns' objections to including hamburger stands and telephone booth.
Are you this does, New York does.
Are you speaking of 15000?
I think he's speaking of 15015.
15, the whole bit seems to me is a very tidy statement of what our sensibility is.
Well, I'm going to put it in here.
Page 60.
Strawberry stand.
You know, that first degree arson wouldn't unless the defendant knew. Unless somebody was actually there. In fact, it wouldn't include a dwelling house because people have to be gone.
I would like to dwell in a building.
Or a hotel and people have to place a place that night.
Well, building is defined in all over the world.
Yes. Carrying on a business.
Carrying on a business, that's an hamburger stand. Fruit stand.
Yeah, but there's got to be somebody actually there. Of course, first in New York.
Right. That's the obvious.
Even the dwelling house has to have somebody specifically there.
I don't.
In New York.
I don't like that. What kind of make if somebody's there now? Somebody decides to set a fire. He probably doesn't even know, or he may not necessarily even know whether someone is there or not. His culpability is no greater just because the person happens to be there. It doesn't happen to be
there.
Its intention, though, is correct in that the one prescribed conduct, where the actor has any reasonable grounds to believe that his setting the fire is going to endanger human life, that's the bird we want to deter. We want to deter him with a big stick, so to speak.
Would your objection be met if we change the definition of protected property to read means any structure, place, or thing customarily adapted for overnight accommodation of people?
Now that's the distinction I'd like to get away with, away from. What if, as I say, particularly in urban area, just as dangerous to set a 9-to-5 business establishment on fire today as it is to set a house or a hotel on fire. The potential is there, and it should be an equally great crime. What we're really trying to do is to draw a language distinction between the corner drugstore and the corner telephone booth.
If you use the nomenclature of carrying on business like New York does, and like we did in our earlier drafts, you get to the Hamburg stand, the telephone booth eliminates that notion.
Except that New York takes care of it by providing that either there has to be a person present or there has to be the reasonable possibility of a person present.
Why couldn't you take the definition of protected property and provide that it means any structure, place, or thing, and then from that point on, pick up the New York thing, in which the defendant or the actor knew that someone was present, or in light of the circumstances, should have known, or whatever this is, or the circumstances are such as to render the presence of such a person therein a possibility. And then add, including public buildings as defined, and forest land as defined. And that would give you the protected property, the New York definition, and would get away from customarily occupied or overnight situation.
You're putting in the definition the elements that go into the various degrees.
Well, I suppose you wouldn't be doing that.
They have to express an idea in New York's 151-0, which they don't carry through into 151-5, which might be reasonable. And that is, the standards that they use, I don't think any standards, all the other satisfactory, it's a matter of doing tracks, the most suitable standards. Use the standard of a person being present in the building, they should use the standard of reasonable cause to believe a person is in the building, and the standard in the first, not the second, is that the fire might damage another building. But it doesn't matter too much if you set, or it isn't as serious to set the drugstore on fire, unless drugstore is adjoined to or would endanger a neighboring residence, a neighboring building where people might be. I'm trying to draw up an idea. That seems like a logical concept of endangering of other buildings.
That would go into definition. We cover that danger to the protected property of another in sub 2 of section 5. But I don't think putting that in the definition of protected property meets the very, very legitimate objection that the gentleman is raising.
Your response is right.
Let's think about the 5 minutes recess. If the rest of us can go out to lunch, Don and
Leon.
I think I know what was going on there.
Do you? Have a suspicion. Right.
All right, who will lead off the discussion? Judge Burns. What do we do with arson other than quit it?
I was going to ask a question, Mr. Chairman. Is it anticipated that we are going to spend all of tomorrow listening to this man in California, or are we going to spend part of tomorrow doing what we are? Right,
well, Don can answer that better than I can. He'll be here late anyway. He'll be 10:45 or so when he's here. But I asked Don how long that would take, and I think you anticipate that it will perhaps take a good part of the day tomorrow to listen to.
Yes, I plan on that we would devote the bulk of tomorrow after 10:45 or whenever it is he arrives, and he expects to arrive about 9:45 in Portland, to his discussion. The plan was, you see, that we would finish everything on the agenda today and we would have tomorrow. I think that perhaps we might plan on maybe starting earlier than we had initially thought for tomorrow, and using it as a work session before he arrives. But I think after he arrives, that you see, it'll be almost 11 o'clock, and then we'll break for lunch, and we'll get back to lunch probably 1:30 or quarter to 2. And he is going to have to leave at 5 to get back to Portland to catch his plane in time. So, in all fairness, not only to Professor Keatish, but to us, I think that the afternoon certainly will be taken up by him.
With that preface, you got something else?
Well, I must say that maybe I'm tired, or maybe I never had sense enough to be on the commission to begin with, so I just don't know how you get there from here.
Well, what would you say if we took, I mentioned this earlier, you didn't need a good response, the more I look at it, the more I think it's a possibility for you. If in the definition of protected property, we provided that, in fact, protected property means any structure, place, or thing where the defendant knows or under the circumstances should know that the presence of a person therein is a reasonable possibility, or a public building as defined, or forest land as defined. Now you'd be getting away from those other factors, and although that would be in the definition, I don't think it would hurt anything because your the crime of first degree says that a person commits a crime of arson, so on and so forth. He intentionally damages one protected property of another, which in the definition would have been covered. And any property, whether his own or another's, and such act recklessly places another person in danger of bodily injury or we have to strike that, or protected, oh no, or protected property of another in danger of damage. Of course, what that would do, that wouldn't do it because it would place the, if that was in protected property, burning a house where he knows that no one is present might do it. But I think that's the area where we have to do this in the definition.
Well, the thing is, what the subcommittee from their minutes, what they were trying to get at is to place the burden on the defendant to make sure that there's no persons or no danger of people being there, rather than putting it the burden on the state at the trial to prove that there were people there and the danger of people there. Isn't that generally what you're trying to do?
No, what we were trying to do, Frank, is to say that it's not going to make any difference the mere happenstance whether there's somebody in this building or not in the building, if it's of the type that is customarily occupied, that it's not going to be just a mere chance whether this defendant's going to be charged with first-degree arson or something else. And I mean, that was the rationale of the model penal code that they were trying to get away from that. And also, we felt, well, the New York approach, for example, placed an incredible burden on the state for first-degree arson. So we were trying to get into a middle ground here where we adopt the rationale of the model penal code and say that it's not going to be just happenstance whether or not he is or is not going to be committing first-degree arson. He sets fire to a building and maybe there's somebody in there and maybe there isn't. If he's lucky, there's nobody in there. But should that stroke of luck mean that he should be treated any differently in the eyes of the law than someone who knew that somebody was in there? If it's the kind of structure that would customarily have people in it. And,
you know,
could I say one thing? On this question of occupancy, in your commentary under preliminary draft one, we mentioned some of the language that was used in the intended draft number 11. And you can see that the model penal code that went through at least 11 drafts on arson before they decided upon it. But in any event, occupancy is to be distinguished from presence. The drafters of the model penal code do not wish to make the unknown or capricious presence of one person a criterion for making the arson subject to a stiffer penalty. It is believed that the offender is ordinarily well able to judge whether the structure is a dwelling, store, factory, warehouse, or other place for the conduct of human affairs. It was believed to be unnecessary to prescribe that buildings be occupied, since buildings are generally employed by human beings in ways that amount to occupancy. In the case of structures other than buildings, such as a mine or a ship, the prosecution would have to allege and prove occupancy as part of its case in chief. But
This is on page 19 of preliminary draft number one.
To inject a thought, Mr. Chairman, we made some reference in a light vein, or not really in a light vein, but to a hamburger stand, say. But we're not so much concerned about that hamburger stand being burned up as we are of the danger that would attach to somebody being in there who might get burned up as a result of the defendant maliciously setting fire to it. If this hamburger stand, so to speak, is such a structure as can reasonably be said to be customarily occupied by people, isn't there a logical or something of a persuasive argument in favor of placing that within the class of protected property? Because we are, it might be the stroke of luck for the defendant under other laws that nobody was in there. Somebody might be in there too. Now, I wouldn't class a phone booth as a type of structure as to be customarily occupied by people. And here I think we get what you're talking about as far as customarily occupied and the factor of physical presence. Now, I can't answer your...
What about doing... does this make any sense? There's I guess it's a New York one that has a kind of an affirmative defense situation. And while I'm against affirmative defenses generally in the criminal field, but could you go at it this way and say that it is an affirmative defense if the defendant shows that that the building or structure or thing is of a sort that at the time or place in question was not likely to be occupied, or something along that line. In other words, I'm thinking about the laundromat that's closed, let's say, at 9 o'clock at night, and you know that nobody's around after that time, or the McDonald's hamburger stand that after it's closed, or the phone booth normally, which is nobody in it, or the camper, let's say, that isn't out in the national forest, and the people are around, and that sort of thing. I don't know.
I think there ought to be some sort of a bonus or a benefit for burning down a McDonald's hamburger
shop. They were my first fun.
Over 3 million sold, or maybe it's four. I don't know.
Jack, what do you think?
Four. I'm worried about camping myself.
About what?
About camping myself, and I don't need it. I'm thinking about the things of arson as being one that's possibly committed by a person whose thought processes are a bit weird and bizarre. And this is the kind of fellow that's going to possibly, you know, disregard people. And the boss, I can easily see some net burning down something with children. This is, I'm hung up on that, kind of, not being too objective.
I mean, well, the situation where
a hot summer evening, the little kids are let sleep out in the yard or something, a camper or something of that sort. I mean, this may be a bit bizarre, but I'm coming up here.
Well, now, under this draft, arson in the first degree, say you had that happen, and there was a question as to whether or not this camper fit into the definition of protected property. If in fact there were children or others, there were human beings present and they were endangered by this, under the draft, it would still be first degree arson, regardless of the kind of property it was. Because subsection 2 of section 5 provides that it's first degree arson if he intentionally damages any property and such act recklessly places another person in danger of bodily injury. So, in a camper situation, if there were people present, there would be.
Well, and actually, at any time or place where you do have people involved, say he's sleeping in his car, pulls off the side of the road, takes a nap, or people sleeping in the back of the station wagon, overnight in an airplane, or in the boat down there waiting to go out for salmon. If there are people actually involved in it, then you don't really have much to worry about.
No, because it's going to be first degree under Section 5, regardless of what kind of property it is.
And then it would be fair to assume that we're talking now, aren't we, about this distinction involving a hamburger stand, McDonald's, a fruit stand, or something like that. And if there was a kid, or the restaurant where the fellow sleeps up and sleeps in the back, or a garage, or something like this, this is going to be covered, even though this type of building is not customarily used as an occupancy, because there were actually people present. And if something serious happens to the person, you have another category of offense anyway, which might not. Well, like the murder case.
Right, but our definition was to get at the other side of the coin there and to say that even though that in this particular instance there was a fire and there weren't any people, just by sheer luck, there didn't happen to be anybody in there, that nonetheless, if it's of the class of property that we designate as protected property, that it's still going to be first degree arson. And it's not going to be any bonus for this defendant that he was lucky enough to set fire to something that didn't happen to have somebody in it at the time.
Well, taking another specific, this would include as protected property a beach cabin or a mountain cabin, which is designed for occupancy, but as a practical matter, may be occupied only brief periods during the year.
But that'd be first degree arson now. A beach cabin. I mean, under present Oregon law.
Right, because the overnight
is a dwelling country.
Right.
Is this feasible as also not entirely satisfactory standard, but perhaps one which includes more of what one includes and excludes? So something along this order, any structure which is real property and any personal property designed for to accommodate people sleeping overnight.
The definition of building, for instance, protected property.
Yeah, I'm saying as a definition of protected property. Any real property would include the laundromat. Importantly, a lot of deserted laundromats have apartments upstairs or are connected with apartment houses. It might include a little bit too much in the way of, let's say, barns. So it might not be totally satisfactory, but really it's real property buildings that we're concerned about, together with personal property designed for the purpose of doing. Not include a boat, but would include a yacht. Wouldn't include an automobile, but it would include a camper.
How would you define personal property?
Well, that's a word you want. We have a list of them in our present statute, which includes things like campers. I was saying, there's some sort of standard language. Personal property designed for the purpose of allowing people to sleep overnight.
Something like
customer, real personal property customarily used for overnight.
Personal property adapted for overnight accommodation.
Correct.
Section.
It's better than.
protected property means any real property structure customarily occupied by people, comma, any...
No. Not the customarily occupied.
Just any real property structure?
Yeah, why not?
Well, then you'd have a barn.
The chicken house.
Okay, customarily occupied by people.
The dog house.
Means any real property structure customarily occupied by people, comma, any personal
property.
We're not property. Any personal
property. All right, any personal property adapted to the overnight accommodation of people.
Or used for. Adapted to or used for.
Yeah, adapted to or used for the overnight accommodation of people, comma, public buildings defined by RS-47901-0, and that'll take care of your objection, right? And forest land defined by RS-47701-1. Is that the objection?
I can't even say it because I don't understand it. Would this cover the laundromat?
It would cover the laundromat. It's real property.
And McDonald's?
McDonald's.
But not the boom boom.
I don't think, no, that the boom itself is personal property.
But this would rule out, your proposal would rule out
a phone booth is a building. Well, but
we get
burglary
is the phone booth customarily occupied by people?
That was pretty
I wouldn't say so.
Sure.
I think under this line,
the phone booth is the second degree under our presence. Because it would be a structure.
You mean under existing or
yeah.
Yes, I think that's correct. But all your amendment would do, Jake, would be to knock out the phone booths.
No, it would knock out cars.
Knock out cars.
It'd knock out boats.
Airplanes.
You see, these other things, unless they're overnight.
Like you said, a division.
Knock out.
Definition of course, to be honest, possibly re-include them in the event there was a person involved.
Yeah, the person would be on the cover of a car.
If someone happened to be in that car, they'd still be covered under Section 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'd still be covered.
Jim, would that take care of you?
Can you read it, William? Can you read that?
Any real property structure customarily occupied by people, any personal property adapted to or used for the overnight accommodation of people, common and public buildings and forest lands as defined by law.
His amendment would leave out the word customarily occupied.
No.
They put them back in because I get the chicken.
Basically, what they're doing is excluding personal property. Unless he is receiving.
Yeah.
Get down to a construction of the phrase customarily occupied by people. But I think, Mr. Chairman, that we have a basic policy decision to make whether we want first degree arson to go so far as to protect people or to protect all types of structure in which people are customarily found. And this could conceivably include the hamburger stand. And I reiterate what I said a few minutes ago in response to Don's comments and let all that be clear. It's a basic policy decision whether we want to go that far.
Well, what kind of structures are not customarily occupied other than, say, barns and garage? I don't know what you'd say a garage attached to your home.
Well, I would think that a McDonald's hamburger stand at 2 o'clock in the morning when it's closed, when it's customarily closed at 10 o'clock, that would be fault in the definition of being customarily occupied by people.
Would it do any good if you said customarily occupied by people at the time of the commission of the crime?
Well, that's what I was trying to get at in making, going at it from the affirmative defense standpoint. In other words, that it's an affirmative defense, or at least, let's say, reduces responsibility. If the defendant can show that at the time and place, I suppose you say, in question, it would be a reasonable likelihood or possibility or probability that the structure was not then customarily occupied.
Well, why not just say customarily occupied at the time of the fire or explosion?
Because then you get into the situation of whether an office building, when does the point come that it's no longer customarily occupied? Right. Is it when the at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, when the majority of the people leave? Or is it after the janitorial people leave? Or is it after the late office workers
leave? It would be customarily occupied so long as there's general janitorial service.
Yeah, but of course the arsonist is not going to know whether they work all night or whether they come in at 4 o'clock in the morning. Or
well, no. Certainly that burden should be on him.
Yeah.
Well, I can't see anything.
I just wonder whether it's a distinction. It seems to me for every McDonald's that you might include when perhaps you don't want to under such a definition. You also include in a lot of other buildings that would be excluded by the time factor. I'm still impressed with the urban condition which exists now, which didn't at the time the original common law distinctions were made. And it seems to me that heavens, if you go back, say, to the Detroit riots or something, probably very few buildings were ignited at a time when they were customarily occupied by people. Yet it's a terribly dangerous condition for two people to set such fires. Granted, the McDonald's usually have parking lots around them, but deserted Modern Mat, for example, doesn't.
I'm not as disturbed as you about the form that exists.
I think that go back to what I said earlier, that the judge has quite a bit of discretion in the sentencing. It can take into consideration this type of thing. Like at McDonald's at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Will the judge have this discretion that he has now under a new criminal code?
Well, the judge would have the discretion of refusing to submit a first degree arson to the jury and sending second degree in if he felt under the facts and the circumstances of the case before him that the structure was not as high as customarily occupied by people.
There's no appeal.
No. And I'm going to try my next arson case in front of Judge Burns. But,
I think we ought to let him have the most appropriate name and settle this.
Yes.
We're hung up. That's what the problem is. Why does everyone assume?
Mr. Chairman, I draw my objection to subsection 1.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, why does everyone assume that customarily occupied by people would automatically not apply to a nighttime, midnight destruction of some particular structure? Customarily occupied by people, to me, means it's some portion of the day or night. And if it's occupied by the people in the daytime, I should think it's arson in the first degree. I just don't like this definition. I'm going to vote no on it.
Well, what if we were to say customarily occupied by people at the time of the fire or explosion? And that wouldn't hurt this.
Well, I don't know whether it complicates it or not. Probably complicates things, but I'd like to point out for a moment, have a sink for a moment. We're talking about, you touched on this, we're talking about a particular kind of crime and criminal here that we haven't been talking about with respect to robbery. A lot of arson is by the pyromaniac. Now this raises some real interesting problems with respect to the care we're taking in delineating the mens rea elements here. That's what we're really talking about. Well, a pyromaniac really isn't concerned with what is in the building or who is in it. His purposes and intent are completely unrelated really to what we're talking about. Now this becomes, I think, especially appropriate for us to think about because in the subcommittee studying the responsibility section, we are going to recommend to the full commission the doctrine of partial responsibility, which says that short of insanity, a defendant may come in and prove that is because of mental disease or defect, he could not form the intent element necessary for the conviction, i.e. first degree arson. So on an entirely different context then, we may be perhaps unduly concerned with being too strict if we draw too broad a definition of the element of the crime. Because often the defendant, if we do adopt partial responsibility, is going to come in and try to get the crime reduced on the grounds of mental disease. Whether he will, of course, is another problem. What I'm saying is that I'm not so concerned that the subcommittee hasn't done, I think the subcommittee has probably done a sufficient job on this.
You're saying that we don't have to draw distinctions as we have during murder, maybe it's a sentence?
I don't think
so. General crime,
because
it should be sentenced.
Because we have a different kind of individual involved in a lot of these cases.
But George, there's no the distinction between first and second degree or third degree really isn't any that have anything to do with intent. It's just the type of structure that he's running. I don't see any way that a person by using partial responsibility could reduce
intent
from first degree.
Intent would be applicable in subsection 2 because it would bear on whether or not he did recklessly. Under subsection 2, first degree arson. But it wouldn't bear on if it was affected.
Well, we've got the word intentional damages.
Yeah. There's certainly the intent element there.
Well, but
there's an intent element in all these crimes that we're defining.
Well, but he intentionally damages in second degree, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would go clear down to accidentally set fire damages.
Well, I'm prepared to reverse my field completely, provided that in doing so that we make it clear that what this language means. In other words, we use this language and let's say that we use the McDonald's hamburger. Clearly in the commentary we ought to make it clear whether McDonald's hamburger is protected property midnight or any all day and all night or not, as the case may be.
Well, if that's the case, it seems to me it would be simpler really to clear it up in the statute itself. What time are we talking about?
Well, as I understand, the customarily occupied by people means a McDonald's hamburger stand 24 hours a day. As I read the minutes and the
I think that's correct, as it's written.
As it's written now, that's what the subcommittee had in mind. Only the subcommittee can tell us.
Well, what does the commission feel? Do you think that, that should be confined to the time of the fire or the explosion?
Would the state have to come in and prove that there is normally a janitor there at 3 a.m.?
That the state be required.
That's why I'm scared to link it to time.
Yeah, that's...
I'm very impressed with something that George said that I certainly didn't think of. We did pay a lot of attention in robbery for the social purpose to be served by the varying distinction. We want to discourage the use of weapons. And here, I think he's quite right. We're dealing with a fellow that just plain burns. And maybe my original objection to the definition that it was overly broad was not a good objection at all. Maybe it should be overly broad, that the statute encompasses an awful lot, and then the judge has discretion whether the penalty against the person as to whether it was in fact a very dangerous situation or not so dangerous situation. There's no reason to draw distinctions just to draw distinctions. And maybe it's just a good idea, as I say, leaving it essentially simple, which it really did.
Yes?
Doesn't subsection 2, or section 5, this is any property, whether his own or another's, and such act recklessly places another person in danger of bodily injury, or protected property of another in danger of damage, doesn't that potentially create a situation where the setting of any fire, anywhere, at any time, could conceivably be raised to the status of first degree arson?
Yes, I think it does, unless we can find it to time.
Yes, it does, and that was our specific intent.
Yeah, that when people are actually endangered from it, regardless of what it is and what type
that
of
was,
fire it is, it
that was
be first
consistent
degree.
With our rationale that was to run through this whole article, and that was to protect people.
Yes.
Would this extend so far? I don't see some district attorney prosecuting a fellow in first degree arson who has gone out and set a wood pile on fire because by doing this he recklessly placed the life of the fireman who comes to put it out in danger.
In Wallowa County? You said some district attorney, you meant Wallowa or...
Oh, I'm not too familiar with this county, the Eastern Mountains.
Well,
maybe.
I don't think so, because now we use the term recklessly. On page 5, this was in connection with reckless burning, but recklessly would apply here the same way. Recklessly. As did the drafts covering certain other crimes, this proposal assumes that certain words of culpability that will be defined for application uniformly throughout the scope. And further, we're assuming that we'll be generally along the lines of the Model Penal Code. Now, the definition that the Model Penal Code has for recklessly is that a person acts recklessly with respect to a material element of an offense when he consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk if the material element exists or will result in his conduct. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that considering the nature and purpose of the actor's conduct and the circumstances known to him, its disregard involves a gross deviation from the standard of conduct that a law-abiding person would observe in his situation. So in the case of a wood pile, I don't think you could even say that he was acting recklessly with respect to the person of another. Unless the wood pile were right next door to a house.
I got to go to
you.
That's why it's so important
to understand. Did you decide on whether we're going to come back before 10?
I don't think that there's... Don, do you think we'd gain anything if we'd convene at 9:30 and continue with this?
Well, I don't know. I'd like to see us get through this while we have you all here for these 2 days.
Once we meet at 9:45 promptly, and we've been at least an hour in.
Let's meet at 9:45 promptly. All except John, you'll be bringing in our visitor.
I get spalled in my proxy.
Sorry. You know, the very question Jack raised there, if we were to tie this, number one, we have the question of the meaning of customarily occupied by people. If we leave it as it is, that's a pretty broad area of what time of the day is included, and I see it as Jim does. If McDonald's is occupied 4 or 5 hours a day, it's occupied by people for these purposes around the clock. Now, if we want to accommodate the view expressed by Jim earlier, namely that someone burning particular McDonald's when there's nobody there perhaps should be treated differently than someone burning it while someone is there, or knowing that someone is there, even though that situation can be taken care of by the sentencing powers of the court, I personally feel that this would be an improvement if we were to add something with respect to time. Namely, if they're customarily occupied by people at the time of the fire or the explosion. Then when we come over to the next section here, sub 2 of this first degree, we'd eliminate the question that Jack raised with respect to these things. And I personally think we'd have the thing solved. And I don't see how anyone could object to it. I certainly don't feel very strongly that we should look at these fine distinctions between one who burns this type of a building, a public building, or another. I think we're overly concerned. I think Professor Platt is right. But if we simply took that time element in, we'd be taking care of two sections. We'd be narrowing it down so that Bob Thornton's objection would perhaps not be satisfied, but it would certainly help it a great deal, and it would narrow the area. And we'd come pretty close to accomplishing what we really want our arson statutes to do for us. And as far as the pyromaniac is concerned, that it's unrelated anyway, really, to this. And I think that would solve it.
Now, what do you propose to do with subsection 2?
Nothing, because protected property would be defined.
You'd leave subsection 2 in?
Yes.
Making the first degree if you burn the property above and beyond protected property. And you recklessly endangered somebody as a result.
Yeah. But the
definition you would say that protected property means structure and so forth, customarily occupied by people at the time of the fire or explosion. Well, I take it then that assuming McDonald's customarily didn't have a night janitor, I don't know whether to do it, assume the facts were that this is the McDonald's and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and customarily they don't have a janitor, then that would not be protected property.
That's correct.
But it would be property under
the building. Under sub 2, if someone did happen to be
arson in the second degree,
yes.
Be a building that isn't protected property.
Yeah.
Might be customarily occupied at that time if they had a janitor in one night a week, or two nights a week, three, four.
Well, I don't know whether it would or not, but again, I imagine the court would certainly submit that to the jury as to whether or not. Was it or wasn't it? They would have to decide. If it was once a month, the court would probably instruct.
How about a duck blind or a duck shack?
No, I would say not.
Isn't subsection 2 there to satisfy your urban concept?
I think it would.
You know, endangering other property. This is directly for the urban problem.
Endangering either you endanger somebody or you endanger
protected property.
I'm just awfully scared of that contract.
Why, Jake?
I don't know what it means.
Well,
for example,
what is
when you say, when, you know, like I say, there's a janitor in 2 nights a week. Does that make it customarily occupied at that time or not? Or is it just that it's customarily occupied on Tuesday and Thursday nights?
All right, you said a moment ago that the way that it is doesn't disturb you too much on second reflection. What does customarily occupied by people mean without the time?
Yeah, that's the same kind of problem.
Except it's much broader.
That would include, for example, a beach cabin customarily occupied on weekends. Would it be arson to burn a beach cabin not on the weekend?
You mean under this as it is now?
As you suggest.
Well, I would say it probably would. Supposing, though, however, he sets fire to this at 4 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday. When you come to beach property, I think it should be arson, whether anyone is there or not, because it is customarily occupied, and the time factor wouldn't hurt that any. Because it would be just as, it would be customarily occupied at 2 in the morning on a weekend or a Wednesday as it would any other time of the day, during the daytime.
I don't agree with that.
But I think that's kind of problem should be protected.
I wouldn't agree with you.
I agree that it should be.
I wouldn't agree with you.
Time factor would unprotected.
Wouldn't you?
Well, can't you say a dwelling house or other property?
Well, see, that's what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, we're back to dwelling
house. Back to dwelling house.
Well, aren't we really concerned with a building or a structure that's of the class of property that's customarily occupied rather than this specific building that's customarily occupied? Isn't that really what we're trying to protect? And not the fact that this particular McDonald's hamburger stand customarily has a janitor, but that this is of the class of structure that customarily would have a janitor.
What kind of version would that one use? Well, the DA would have to offer proof that it was customarily occupied at that. I don't know whether it's time of night or time of week or time of month or whatever. We would have to prove the time of the fire, which could be difficult in some cases.
Well, it seems to me that the rationale that the Model Penal Code has is pretty sound, and that is that what we're trying to do is not make it a capricious circumstance. It's going to upgrade this to first degree arson. And that if we pin it down to that particular time, it seems to me that we are injecting just a chance element here.
What? You've got chance already there in your subsection 2, that possibility.
You mean of section 5?
Section 5.
Well, that just elevates another.
Well, that just takes care of the situation where you burn a guy's barn and he's in there pitching hay at the time. We want to discourage that kind of conduct and elevate it to the first degree arson.
Still, George's idea, you know, still leaves me in conclusion that there's no reason to put in distinctions about really good reasons. I don't see a purpose for that.
What effect would Tony's suggestion have on a delayed start on a fire?
Well, I thought of that. Because after it was over, I could see it here, and you'd say, all right, what if a fire is at the time of the fire, and it's set at 2 in the morning, or an explosion particularly, at 2 in the morning, knowing it will go off at 6? That's another question that we're going to have to face.
Much more so with explosions than with
yes.
fires, although it certainly can happen in fires.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, the most difficult parts of this work deal with the things that don't happen very often.
Sure.
We're thrashing with the insanity defense, and it only comes up once in a few days. And I was just trying to think back 2.5 years on the bench. I think I've had one arson case. Or two, maybe, I'm not sure. I remember one particular, and I think maybe two, but it's a very, very, very unusual sort of thing. I don't know, Jake, you might have some better
feeling. I've only tried one.
So it's not unusual to occur, it's just unusual to prove.
Yeah.
And the very reason that we must take so much time is with this particular kind of crime is because it's such a sensational and fear-producing crime vicariously. When you read about a house being burned down in the paper, you immediately are frightened for your own safety. A terrifying sort of crime.
Well, it's also notorious, I think, because of the civil disorders.
Yeah.
And, God forbid, it should be.
And that's the very reason why insanity gets so much attention, and yet, incidentally, it's really an exceptional
crime. I thought they might kind of reach the important thing myself.
I've got another question to get a section four, but I don't want to bring it
up. Does anybody think we're getting close to solution? Bob, you haven't said anything for
me. No, I don't go for it. I don't like the language, and it seems to me that I would take the New York statute and possibly alter the definition to some degree, but it seems to me far and away the more simplified and more effective approach.
Well, what are you going to do with protected property if you
don't? I don't like that term. Where did it come from?
I think Spalding.
Any judicial interpretation?
I don't know. Is it
customarily used? Never heard that.
No, it is.
I haven't either.
Because it's used only under Section 5. And instead of defining it and then referring to it in Section 5, you can just spell it out under Section 5. And usually you say definitions for where you refer to it in many different sections.
Well, that was my first suggestion.
It's a perfectly good concept. I don't want to argue against it. I'm just going to see the reason for it.
You think then, Bob, that we should do what you mentioned earlier, is to, if we're going to have this definition of protected property, either tie in the New York deal to it, or else eliminate that definition and put it in separately as New York has.
I don't like, from the beginning, inserting all these new terms that have no prior judicial instruction interpretation. I don't see any useful purpose served by it. I can see lots of the mischief that can result.
Of course, if we were to be the first to use this term, if we define it properly to everyone's satisfaction, it may very well be that other states would follow it, thinking that, and we would have accomplished something if we do it.
Well,
actually,
the Model Penal Code, Bob, is full of new terms, but they define them. Occupied structure is a new term, for that matter, in their arson article, but. They go on to define it in a certain way, and all we did was to use the language protected property. We first started off with building, and we defined it in a certain way.
In response to your observation, I can think of an excellent example where the use of the old term is really causes a mischief, and that is the change from larceny to theft in this draft. Larceny is the preferred and judicially interpreted word by hands down, but it carries so much difficulty with it that it's better to use a new term.
I can see that. I'll back that.
That's a general observation, and that is not necessarily true in all cases, but there is something to be said, I think.
I would agree with you on that, certainly.
Well, I'm not. It doesn't disturb me too much that we take a term and create a term. Indeed, if I read Bruce Baldy's language.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't disturb me too much that we take the term, create it, and define it, and even define it in this sense, in that customarily occupied by people, I think properly leaves it as a question for the prior fact and so on. That in and of itself doesn't bother me. I must say I'm still, I can't get away from the fact that I sure don't want a phone booth fire to be a first degree arson. That just offends me. And
maybe change the term phone booth because
of that. You put a commentary in, we don't mean a phone booth. I suppose really, You're including the Don's hamburgers and long and that, so I suppose it's all right. I certainly don't feel as strongly against that as I did to start.
I'm not sure the phone booth is that a building or a structure, maybe it's a structure, may not actually be covered.
A structure plays a thing. Structure plays a thing.
The only thing I'm sure of, Mr. Chairman, is I can see why the subcommittee has so much trouble.
Yes. Well, we could go back to existing Oregon law.
Oh no, it's even worse. Somebody moved out of their trailer house for a few days and moved furniture out and painted it. While it was being painted, somebody burned it down. Under our statute, it's either real property in the wrong house or personal property, one where it contains personal property. That was where it contains other property. And in some such percentage. At any rate, it wound up second degree instead of first degree arson. That's right.
What did you find wrong with the New York statute, Don, if we incorporated with it the forest lands that we have?
Well,
and public building.
Their first degree arson says that it has to be a building, and further, that there has to be a person in the building at the time of the fire, and third, that the defendant knew that fact, or the circumstances were such that to render the presence of a person therein at the time a reasonable possibility. And the subcommittee felt that this placed quite a burden on the state in each case to prove first degree arson, to prove not only that there was a person in there at the time, but further that the defendant knew about it.
Or should have known.
Should have known.
And what was your objection to it? That it was too great a burden on the state?
Yes. And that if we're looking at trying to protect people, that in that instance, you're not, the only reason that it's first degree arson in this case was that there happened to be somebody in the building at the time.
What you are really trying to do then, as you said earlier, two things. One, to ease the burden on the prosecution, and two, to change the emphasis from people to a class of property in which occasionally or normally you would expect to find people.
Well, our primary purpose wasn't to ease the burden on the prosecution. It was to protect people primarily, and that we felt that it would protect people better if we define this class of property to and make it first degree if it fell in within this definition, even though there might not be anybody in the building at the time of the crime.
Well, I don't see anything wrong with it, personally.
Well, couldn't you take the New York and instead of saying and, couldn't you say or, and don't have the defendant knows, or the facts and circumstances are such to render the presence of such of a person there in a reasonable possibility?
Jim, you always start these things and don't offer a solution.
He's great at having the attorney write briefs. Why don't you have him
bring along?
One observation I can share with you, this has taken all the fun out of my lighting a fire in my fireplace when I get home.
Jim, can you prepare to call it Presto Law Amendment? Well, I simply make this observation as to myself, not as to the others. By the time I get to the end of a day like this, I'm completely bereft of any constructive thoughts at all.
Well, let's knock it off until 9:45 in the morning, then. What do you say?
Fine.
Standard recess.